Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
The Masters is unrivaled in tournament golf. The game's best spend their entire careers vying for that famous green jacket worn by its champion. No one was more successful at the prestigious Augusta, Georgia Club than Jack Nicklaus. And none of his victories were more exciting than the one in April 1975 when, in the prime of his career, he played the best golf of his life to fight off the two rivals who threatened his place atop the sport. Now, as we begin Masters Week 2014 for the very first time, all the pressure shots and thrilling drama from the 1975 Masters are brought back to life in the book The Magnificent Masters: Jack Nicklaus, Johnny Miller, Tom Weisskopf, and the 1975 cliffhanger at Augusta. Gil Capps is an Emmy Award-winning associate producer on NBC Sports Golf Broadcasts and managing editor at Golf Channel. So for you, Gil Capps, what is it like to bring yourself back to that time, bring yourself back to 1975, and look at the playing field of golf and kind of set the stage for this magnificent Masters?
You know, it was so different back then. I mean, the mid-70s, we had a group of players, and particularly American players at the time. The game was much more international now, but all of these guys were household names and just steely-eyed competitors. And the game was different in a sense too, Joe, back then, because with the way the courses were groomed and equipment, you know, we've made a lot of advances in the last 39 years. The equipment and balls the guys played with back then, I think, allowed the really talented players and the real cream of the crop to rise to the top of these leaderboards. And that was the case with Nicklaus and Weisskopf and Miller. And I'd be remiss to say, you know, the main thing that attracted me to this subject was the fact that these three guys that week were considered the best players in the game of golf. Now, I give a little bit of an apology to guys like Lee Trevino and Gary Player, major championship winners who were at the top of the game as well. But these three guys, you know, had the most talent. They were the hottest players in the game. They were the favorites in Vegas. And we all know in sports, you know, how rare it is to you start a competition or a NCAA tournament or, you know, any kind of playoffs, and for at the very end to have the best still there and fighting it out. And in golf, in the modern era before 1975, the Masters, and since, we've never had the top three storylines at the start of the week still there, right, battling to the bitter end on Sunday afternoon. It's never happened since, and so that was one of the things that really really caught my attention.
You make the point in the book that the week was destined to be historic from the very beginning because of the arrival of Lee Elder, who was the first African-American ever invited to the tournament by this very exclusive club. And then there are the subplots with some of the players that you just mentioned, all Hall of Fame players, Arnold Palmer, Tom Watson, Gary Player, and Lee Trevino. So all the ingredients were in place.
You know, that's one of the exciting things about doing a book like this is the ability to take all these, as you call them, subplots, and be able to connect all these dots and provide all this this context of what it was like that week at that time. You know, it was, you know, Lee Elder becoming the first black golfer to play in the Masters. You know, that had been such a big story, you know, particularly outside of golf. I mean, there were a lot of good African-American players in the late 60s. Early 70s, and the fact that none of them had ever been invited to play in the Masters was a really big issue for the sport. So for Lee to win a golf tournament, but unfortunately for him, it happened to be the week after the 1974 Masters. So he spent, you know, if you can imagine, you know, the next 50 weeks after he won, constantly talking about the Masters, all these media requests and endorsement possibilities and other responsibilities he had. And, you know, he was almost a basket case by the time he got to the 1975 Masters. But that was a very significant moment, you know, in our sport. And to have him acquit himself well, you know, not particularly on the course. He missed the cut, but the way he handled it. And then, as you say, all these other Hall of Fame guys who were playing at that time, you know, from Arnold Palmer and Lee Trevino and Gary Player and Raymond Floyd, Hal Irwin, the list goes on and on. The players that the guys like Nicklaus had to beat every week was truly mind blowing. And I think we too much in time, you know, look back and say, well, this period was, I remember when it was never better than this period. But if you do the research and go back and look at the golf in the 1970s, there's a very good case to be made that the crop of players, you know, who were born from the late 30s, you know, to the late 40s, you know, and playing at that time in the 70s were maybe the best generation of American golfers.
And there is a little luck here as well. As you say, you have great players who play great games, and some have great games sometimes and not so great games the others. But as you indicated before, never before, you have the top three players playing the top game of their lives all in the same championship at the same time.
That is correct. We've had plenty of two-man battles, but you know, it's a little more interesting when you have three there, and especially the three of Nicklaus and Miller and Weisskopf, because these guys had had quite a bit of history amongst them. In particular with Jack, you know, he was the best player, already considered the greatest player ever to play the game at that time, even though he was only age 35. You know, Johnny was this kid who had come up in the mid-60s and had a relationship with Jack, and Jack kind of helped him out a little bit. And then Johnny went on this great run in 73, 74, 75 that many players and many pundits considered Johnny to be the best player in the game at that point. You know, something that Jack didn't really take too kindly to. Jack liked being considered the best, no matter who it was challenging him. But Johnny had only won one major to that point. So a Masters title really that year was going to set the record straight as far as who was the best player in the game. And then Tom Weisskopf, who was kind of the tortured soul, you know, he was considered the most talented player in the game at that time, had lived in Jack Nicklaus' shadow ever since he turned professional. He was the first guy who was really considered the next Nicklaus. You'd have that moniker, you know, and that weight upon his shoulders put on him. And he dealt with that and lived in Nicklaus' shadow, also having been from Ohio and living in Columbus, Ohio, you know, throughout his entire career. And that was tough on him because he didn't have the same makeup as Jack, and neither did Johnny. But it was a crucial point in their careers there. You know, if they would have won instead of Jack, what it could have done for them and the confidence it could have given them. Golf is just like any other sport, Joe. You know, golf is all about confidence. And if they could have beat Jack that final round at the 1975 Masters, you know, we could be talking about those two, even though they're very well known and very famous, in a much different light than we do today. And also Jack, I'm not sure if it would have affected Jack in a negative way as much as it would have the other two in a positive way. But let's face it, the game is golf is, you know, it's kind of fickle. And those two guys may have gone on to beat Jack in a major or two that he won later. And, you know, and Jack would have one less major, which I tell you, a guy named Tiger Woods, you know, if he could take a couple of of those wins off of the 18 that Jack has, he'd be much happier today, I think, as well.
When we speak of Jack Nicklaus, of how does he look at that particular game and how he played? This is a man who has a storied career and filled with great moments. How does he look at that particular one?
You know, he looks at that week, at least the finish on that Sunday, as being the most fun and enjoyable time he had, you know, playing the game of golf. And, you know, and Jack, you know, I think it was the ultimate for Jack that afternoon to be able to take the best shots from his two biggest and I say most threatening rivals, because Jack understood that Tom and Johnny had the goods, you know, to beat him when they were playing well and Jack was playing well. You know, not a lot of other golfers. Jack was playing well. There were very few golfers who could also play well and defeat him at the same time. So for Jack to be able to rise to the occasion and play as well as he did and thwart this this threat from these other two guys who were playing as well as they could also, you know, it gave him a huge boost. And I think Jack probably was – I don't know how long it took to wipe the smile off his face after that day. That was that was why that was such a big thrill for Jack at that time. And also, Joe, to be honest with you, Jack, that was the first time ever that Jack won three straight starts. He'd won the previous two starts going into the Masters, and he was admitting, at that time, I think still admits to this day that period there in March and April of 1975. Was probably if you put the whole package together of how he was swinging, how he was putting, how he was thinking his way around the golf course, put it all together, that was the best golf that he ever played in his career.
What is fascinating is that moment, that putt, the famous putt, is still some of the most seen footage of sports history.
And you know, to put it into context with why that is such a big deal, I'll tell you this. You know, Jack Nicklaus is one of the most stoic players on the golf course in the history of the game, and a guy that stoic's not the word. Jack would make eye contact people and wave and acknowledge what was happening, but in a sense, he kept his emotions under control better than anyone else who's ever played the game. Never got too high when things were really going as well or he hit a great shot. Never got too low when the opposite happened. So in the history of his career, I can recall only two times where he did something that was very out of the ordinary for him on a golf course. The first was British Open 1970 when he wins and throws his putter, you know, probably 10 feet in the air, which you'd never see a reaction like that from Nicklaus, but it broke a long streak, a winless streak in major championships for him, and came just a few minutes after his father had passed away. So Jack was really excited to get that win. And the other was the 1975 Masters on the 70th hole there when he makes that putt, and he watches it go in, and he turns away a little bit, and he sticks his putter in the air and leaps for joy. And trots right off the green in this, almost kind of like a Fred Astaire dance. And those are the two indelible moments in his career where he shows some uncharacteristic emotion. So that shows you what that putt made, how unlikely it was, and how every player you talk to at that time talks about that green and how it just was putting a putt like Jack Putt, up the ridge and up this hill and just have to get it. Everything had to be perfect and perfectly aligned, and to be able to hold that putt at that moment was, I hate to use the word miraculous, but it wasn't far short from it.
One of my favorite stories in the book actually is a broadcasting story, which you talk about everything being perfect. Vin Scully is calling the tournament, and you write in the book, Vin Scully would be remembered for what he didn't say. Scully said, "So it is that simple, the roll of the putt." He then took the microphone attached to his headset, flipped it above his forehead to, as he says, "make sure I wouldn't step on the moment, which I thought was absolutely supreme. Best thing I ever did was shut up."
You know, that's in sports and sports broadcasting, that's a tough one to get across to a lot of announcers who are just starting, you know, to know when to maybe add something that needs to be added and then when just to be quiet and let, you know, the drama play out, especially on TV and in golf. The legendary CBS producer, director Frank Cherkinian, who passed away a few years ago, but always considered that final round of the 1975 Masters and those 2 hours of that show, you know, the best show that he ever produced. And he was a guy who said, you know, hey, we're on TV. If you know, we can see a guy missed a putt. You don't need to say it. You know, he wanted captions to the pictures, and he was fortunate in the way that he had, you know, a legendary broadcaster like Vin Scully, you know, bringing that home and knowing what to say and having, you know, and Goff saw the byplay between these two English commentators, Ben Wright and Henry Longhurst out on 15 and 16. You know, today you'll still hear people, you know, repeat the exchange that they had on those holes. You know, when Weisskopf makes a birdie putt at 15 and Jack has yet to hit his putt on 16, Ben Wright says, you know, that's evil music to Nicholas's ears. And then it goes over to 16 when Nicholas makes his putt. You know, Henry Longhurst in his gravelly old English voice just says, you know, I've never seen a putt, you know, like that in all my life. And Trakanian cuts back to the tee, and there's Weisskopf and says, you know, now Weisskopf must take it just as he dished it out moments ago. You know, those are lines that'll still give, you know, the diehard Goff fan goosebumps. You know, and the way that Trakanian cut back and the interplay that he created between those three. It's one of the other reasons why that tournament is so memorable. It was the way it was shown that afternoon. And Goff is a very tough sport to broadcast. You know, you don't have one ball right in front of you and all the players right in front of you. They're scattered about, and knowing, you know, what to show live and what then to show back on tape, because you can't show everything live. But the way that was shown across, you know, in the homes of probably more than 15 million people watching that glorious Sunday afternoon at Augusta, you know, and the other thing, Joe, I think that really for the Masters tournament, I make the argument that afternoon really cemented the legend of this great event, you know, which wasn't necessarily created 80 years ago to become the most famous golf tournament in the world, but that afternoon, with the best players in the world and a thrilling finish and seeing this course bathed in glorious sunshine, you know, that's what we think of the Masters tournament. You know, to this day, every year we think that tournament produces, you know, that kind of drama, and more or less it does, but that was really the first year that it produced something like that and created helped create the legend of the Masters tournament and it's standing in the sports world today.
And it's one of those things that's also, when you get to the end of the book where you think, well, you know, how do you top that?
Yeah, and look, everybody has their favorite memories or favorite sporting events, and I don't necessarily make the argument this is the greatest golf tournament ever, because it's whatever you want to, you know, you think is, right, is great. Is it one great individual performance, or has it got to be a battle down the stretch? Has it got to include big names? And obviously, a lot of people will point to the 86 Masters when Jack wins his last. You know, but that was different. That was a different context and had different meaning. And it sure was exciting. And I don't, you know, if you gave me the chance, you know, I'm going to give you a DVD of 75 and 86. Which one are you going to put in your library and pull out and watch all the time? I'm not sure which one I would choose. But in a sense, what 75 meant probably in the long run to Jack, and what it meant to the other guys, and what it meant to the Masters tournament, I make the argument that 75 as a tournament was probably the more significant. I don't know if we think any less of Jack Nicklaus if he wouldn't have won 86. I think he'd still be the same guy and still be remembered just as he is today. But if he didn't win 75, and if one of those other guys wouldn't have won, if it wouldn't have been such a great Masters, I think we would think of all those things a bit differently.
So as we start Masters Week 2014, the news has been, of course, Tiger is out. So how do you look at this week, and I mean, can you fathom another magnificent Masters?
You know, I wish I had a crystal ball. This is one of those where, you know, a lot of these Masters we go into and we're just raving about, oh, Tiger's playing great, or Phil Mickelson's playing great, or look at all these other guys. But, you know, unfortunately this year, Joe, as we enter here Masters Week, you know, you look down the list of the guys in the top 10 and they're question marks by almost all of them. You know, I don't know if we'll wind up having another Magnificent Masters, because I think to have that, you have to have that one alpha, really mega superstar, and that's kind of what made 75 work, was that you had Jack. So since there's no Tiger this year, I'm not sure if we'll be able to pull off one that maybe somebody will be writing a book about and, you know, in another 39 years, but you never know. I tend to think guys like, you know, at the Masters, every year it seems like it needs to be somebody who has experience at Augusta. It's been 35 years since we've had a first-time winner there. But you never know. It could happen this year, but you know, keep a lookout for Roy McIlroy and Adam Scott. They seem to be the best player, among the best players in the world. They've been playing the best the past couple months, even though they had each had a hiccup here recently in tournaments that they really should have won on Sunday, and they kind of threw them away. You know, those would be the two guys I'd probably really keep a lookout starting here on Thursday.
Well, the name of the book is The Magnificent Masters, Jack Nicklaus, Johnny Miller, Tom Weisskopf, and the 1975 Cliffhanger at Augusta. The book is published by DeCapo. Gail Capps, thank you very much for being with us. Have a great week at Augusta, and thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Joe, really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, The Magnificent Masters. It is published by DeCapo, by Gail Capps. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.